Welcome to Understand Suicide, the podcast of journalist and therapist Paola Fontanelli. Since her father's suicide in 2005, Paola has dedicated her life to breaking the silence around this most stigmatized of subjects. Her book, Understanding Suicide, Living with Loss, Paths to Prevention, was nominated for the National Book Award in Brazil, and the English edition is now available on Amazon.
Hello, everyone. Welcome again to my podcast. So today is the fourth day of the convention here by the American Association of Suicidology, and we're going to talk about a topic that I have covered in the past here on the podcast, for those of you who follow the podcast, and because it's something that really touches my heart. We know that older adults, they have the highest rate of suicide, and there isn't much being done. We know that during the pandemic, this is something that became headlines, right? Because they were dying. And everybody started talking, and it was a major topic everywhere. I mean, what do we do? How can we help? But the truth is, they were isolated. They were away from their families. They couldn't get any visitors. And we saw them dying, and not much was done to help. So this is something that we're going to talk about today, because my guest, Laura Shannon House, she has just finished a wonderful research on how to help this population and how to reduce social isolation and suicidality in older adults. So that's what we're going to talk about. I'm very interested. I attended her panel and I was quite impressed by the research, and also I have to say, the results didn't surprise me, because I talk about this all the time here, the importance of relationships, and that's what you researched. Mm-hmm. So can you please just give us an overall of what the research was, and then we'll talk about the results. Okay, so my first question to you is, why did you decide to study this population and the impact of connections?
Yeah, I mean, well, I think I had a student in a training, and that student said, can you imagine, it was a Living Works Assist training, can you imagine training this to Meals on Wheels providers, so people who deliver meals to older adults? And I thought that was a really good idea. And so the student actually happened to be kind of a leader in the aging network. So that student invited me to present to leaders in aging across multiple states, and we introduced the idea and kind of wrapped the research around the mm-hmm. first grant, kind of wrapped the research around what the need was.
Mm-hmm. You said that the question of the research was, how can a small dose of sincere connection impact this population? So what does that mean, a sincere connection in small dose? Yeah. What does that mean?
So that's actually the second grant, which is uh-huh. kind of a warm calling program mm-hmm. called the Be With Innovation. And so the Small Dose of Sincere Connection is really inspired by Dr. Thomas Joyner's research and his book. And he, in that book, kind of talks about the importance of relationships and connection. And in that, you know, there's three states that contribute to suicide risk, to lethal and near lethal suicide attempts. And in that, one of those states is thwarted belongingness, meaning mm-hmm. like I don't belong, or I'm not included, not connected. And that really has two components, lack of reciprocally caring relationships and chronic loneliness. So this small dose of sincere connection we were trying to build is to kind of combat that state. So how, yeah, as a counselor, psychologist, or somebody that trains counselors and psychologists, you know, this isn't a psychological treatment. Uh-huh. This is a lay provider kind of treatment, and it's bi-directional. So it's very different than like therapy or counseling, mm-hmm. which really is kind of focused all on the client. Reciprocal care kind of says that we tend to need humans in our life, people that contribute to our life, and we also contribute to their life. That's like kind of that bi-directional reciprocal care. So we designed kind of a program that would help big-hearted volunteers form these kind of sincere connections with older adults that were bi-directional, that were respectful, that were, there's kind of some components in the befriending literature, in the gerontology literature that say also intimacy is required, meaning kind of like deeper sharing. So not just sharing about the weather or what you ate for dinner, but more sharing about what's really on your heart. And so this training really is about the training and the treatment on the B side is really about how to make those sincere connections and really listen closely and listen well and care and learn from as well as contribute to that older adult's life.
What did it look like? I know that you had over, was it 777, and now you have the results for 540 something, right? So you're still getting some more results in, but that's two-thirds. So it's enough to at least infer some results. So what did it look like? So you trained a few people that would call them, how often and what would they do? How long would they stay on the phone?
So we trained 60 people, and so about 30 of them were trained in just that B training, and then another 30 of them were trained in the B training and also Living Works Assist, which is an evidence-based suicide intervention model, because we know that probably in this process there's going to be older adults at risk of suicide, and we need people to, we wondered, you know, is it possible to make a difference in that. And so we trained those 60 people, and then we gave them a caseload of older adults, and then we collected data every 2 weeks. So the older adult would get a call dosage anywhere from 20 minutes to 30 minutes, but sometimes older adults were really distressed, and the calling partner
would last longer.
And it would last longer, that's right, even upwards to over an hour. So, and there's also a little tricky because sometimes they would call more than the they were supposed to, because we're trying to control this these treatment dosages so we can measure an effect.
Of course, yeah.
But, you know, you get big-hearted people that care. Sometimes they call more than...
Well, but that's what relationships are like, right? You can't really predict everything.
Right.
You can't put it in a box. And I'm sure it was difficult to even do that. I mean, like I have to stay between 20 and 30 minutes.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. It really was.
Yeah, because what do you say, right? If it's, oh, but can you talk more? So, no, because I'm supposed to. Yeah, but I understand from the research perspective, you have to have some kind of predictability. And
Yeah. We want to be able to say that a small dose of sincere connection makes a difference. And if we can prove that, we can get these programs on the National Council on Aging's evidence-based registry, which would unlock this Title III D dollars for states to be able to train suicide intervention and train kind of a warm calling human relationship type training to big-hearted people that want to make a difference in the lives of older adults.
Yeah. What would they hear? Because I'm sure you've read some of these results, and what would they hear on a weekly basis from them?
Yeah, I mean, it really varied. So some of them were much less risk. So they talked about like what was going on in their life, you know, looking forward to Easter or Christmas or whatever holiday was coming up. They might have talked about family visits that they were getting or not getting. So that's kind of on one side of the continuum, whereas on the other side of the continuum, they're really challenging things happening during COVID. So, I mean, we had older adults who lost spouses and talked about that in the call. We had an older adult that lost a child and talked about that on the call.
Wow.
We had older adults that had thoughts of suicide and talked about that those on the call. So, you know, they really varied across older adults, what they talked about.
Yeah. Was it always during the pandemic? The study?
This treatment ran from mostly the end of 2020 through February of 2023. So we did four cohorts of treatment. And so that those cohorts, it's an eight-week treatment protocol where they get calls every week. And then we train people to kind of pick up on the next call where they left off. So we teach them to take notes. We give them like areas to take notes in, questions to ask. So it's really kind of structured. So learning grandkids' names, learning their hobbies, mm-hmm. learning what they care about, what matters to them, what their previous career was, what might be distressing if they have health issues or health concerns, if they have pain, what is that like? So mm-hmm. They can kind of take notes on that call. And it really wasn't too awkward where, I mean, 20 to 30 minutes, you can get a good connection.
Yeah, it's a good, length of call. Yeah,
the calls that I've listened to, those connections are really, they've really mattered to the older adults. Yeah. And they've told us that they care so much about their calling partners. And their calling partners also sometimes shared about what's going on in their life.
Of course, yeah.
One in fact, shared both the calling partner and the older adult were both caregivers. And so they actually shared some about the stresses involved in caregiving. And in that process, they kind of learned from each other and felt good about not burdening their families with that, but both mm-hmm. felt like each other wanted to.
They had a place for that.
Yeah. And they felt good about not burdening their family with kind of their own stress around caregiving.
Yeah. One of the things that caught my attention in the results, and we can move to the results now, but was the fact that the control group, and for those of you who don't know what that means, because that's a research jargon, control group, if she were doing some kind of research with medication, the control group would be getting placebo. So that's what the control group is. To make sure that what you're doing is really having an impact, you have to have two or more groups, but one that doesn't get the medication or the treatment that you're providing. That's the only way you can really infer and be sure that that's what really impacted and made a difference. But in your case, you had improvement mm-hmm. in depression, right?
Not in depression, but in boarded belongingness, there was a slight improvement, and there was also a slight improvement. It was the main one that surprised us was thwarted belongingness.
Yeah. With the support group.
With the control group.
With the control group. Yeah, so what we're saying is the results, they also happen with the control group. And what you were saying was that, well, because they were also getting these calls, but much shorter, right?
No. They didn't get any treatment calls. So we had two treatment conditions that got calls. Okay. But the control group, all three conditions get data collected from them, from our lab. Uh-huh. And all the data that are collected verbally. So our lab members, my research team, the Hope mm-hmm. Lab at Georgia State University, calls every 2 weeks, or the older adults call us. Uh-huh. And this is completed at this point in time, but they call us or have called us, and we collect a battery of measures. Mm-hmm. And so we collect data. And so what was kind of a surprising finding is that, depression, like with the high risk group and all that, the control group got worse over the pandemic. And of course, the two treatment groups improved, and there were significant reductions in depression, mm-hmm. Especially for the Be With group and the group trained in Living Works Assist. But with thwarted belongingness, there was actually improvement in all three groups, and the treatment groups, it was more marked. The slope was, mm-hmm. more significant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the control group had slight improvement, and so wondering what that's about. We hypothesize that because the lab members called them uh-huh. to administer the measures, even though they didn't get warm calls and talk to mm-hmm. a calling partner about their life, even though they didn't have that treatment, they just answered the research questions. They were asked questions that they don't normally get asked just to collect the data. So we think that just the assessment, just the data collection process, might have functioned kind of like a mini dose.
Yeah, so just the fact that someone was contacting them, even though it wasn't what you call the warm call, which is the longer call, mm-hmm. still that's drops of connections, right?
A little bit.
A little bit, and that had an impact.
Yeah. It did. Wow. For that variable.
For that variable. Yeah, that's amazing. It's you know, funny, you're talking about that treatment, the treatment. And when you think about human connection, it's just a phone call. Right. So it's not that hard, is it?
No, it's really not. And there's really, I mean, our training is like, you know, 2 hours long, and we can really kind of shift out of, you know, maybe a more surface level connection to a real sincere connection. We have strategies, active listening strategies, reflection strategies, ways to pay attention, ways to ask open-ended questions about things, to help older adults talk about things that are salient to them, things mm-hmm. that are require deeper sharing or more vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And so those things, we actually need to be talking to somebody about those things. And it's not therapy, but it is therapeutic.
It is, yeah. I'm just thinking about the images we saw during the pandemic, that the, you know, grandkids or the kids would stay outside and just wave into them, and because they couldn't get in. It was just heartbreaking. And I was sharing with you before we started the interview that I created a group during the pandemic just for older adults. I mean, if you're feeling alone, just join in.
Yeah.
And I remember I used to say some lives that I had with the Brazilian population, and I would say, call your older adults.
Yeah.
Call them.
Yeah.
Just call. You don't need to go there. You don't need to bring them anything. It will make a difference.
Yeah.
Remember your aunt, your uncle, your grandma. Call them. Just mm-hmm. give them a call. It's not much. And now with your research, I'm saying, wow.
Yeah.
So it does make a difference.
It does.
It doesn't have to be
Mm-mm.
much.
No.
Yeah.
But it needs to be intentional and sincere.
Mm-hmm.
Some parts of it involve, well, the reciprocal care, so the mutual sharing of both parties. Respect, meaning like if you make an appointment to call somebody or they think you're going to call, they follow through with that. Because if you don't, we're kind of communicating inadvertently that maybe they're not as important to us.
Mm-hmm.
So following through your appointments, you know, respectful, autonomous. Autonomy is another aspect of the befriending literature. And then, of course, making sure that we're sharing back what we're grateful for, what we learned. So making sure that, you know, older adults have a lot of wisdom and life experience and a lot of resilience in a lot of ways. There's a lot of beautiful aspects of mm-hmm. Of aging. And so when we have the privilege to be able to connect with older adults, making sure that we can share back the things that we're taking away. So we train people, and that's part of that B training. Maybe there's something that they learned or that will stay with them. And how can you express that gratitude directly to the older mm-hmm. adult for what you learned and what you're taking away, what mattered to you, what you valued, or you know, mm-hmm. so being able to share and express that gratitude as well.
Yeah. The other thing you shared too was that they said, and you had some beautiful quotes from mm-hmm. them, but I remember you shared with us that some of them would say that now I'm more willing to ask for help.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So
that's amazing.
We followed up with about 100 of the 777, and 60% of them explicitly said that this made them more hopeful and that they were more willing to reach out for help.
Wow.
So, you know, a large portion didn't say whether that would happen or not. But only 5% said that they would be less willing to ask for help. So 60%
it's a lot.
That's a lot, actually. Yeah.
Well, I'm just here wondering if all the volunteers who did the calling, if they ever stopped.
Well, actually,
it must have been hard.
Oh, it was
must
hard.
Must be hard. How can you break that connection?
Yeah. We actually teach them how to terminate. So we lean on the counseling and psychology literature for how to terminate and how to prepare the older adult that there's two calls left, there's one call left, you know. And then how to say goodbye. And part of that gratitude is being able to say goodbye and what this program meant to you. And what surprised us is that so many wanted to keep connecting.
Yeah.
So many of the volunteers
and
the older adults.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah.
So, you know, we asked permission individually, but we had to go back to our counties who we established these memorandums of understanding because that's different than what we had agreed to. We'd agreed to like an 8-week treatment. Mm-hmm. And so went back to those counties and asked, is it possible that we can actually share the contact information of the older adult mm-hmm. with you? And so we went back and asked permission, and some gave us that permission, but also some things happened we couldn't have anticipated is on the call, they shared that information with each other. And so, I mean, that's not something we can control. Yeah. But it was, you know, something that was really touching.
Oh. Laura, what's next for you?
Learning, I think.
Are you still going to work with this population? Do you have...
We'll see. Like, I think there's... We have over 9,000 audio files because we worked with a software development company who built us a system that when we program the caseload of the volunteers, the older adults, into the volunteers' caseload, or the calling partners, as we should call them, like, they... When they called, they could call into, like, a generic number to protect the identity of the older adult and protect them from having any contact information, and so... They could just push one for Mary or two for Susan or three for Brian or whoever. And so the software company would automatically record mm-hmm. those audio files. And so
I'm sure you have so much material
yes,
from that.
They're all protected. So, you know, we're going to have on this grant about enough to code maybe 150 of them. Mm-hmm. But not coding 9,000. So I hope that we can get more funding so that we can do the work to code those. And part of that is really special because when we do this research, we can make a case, a really strong case, that these kind of programs need to be supported in the aging network. And we need to allocate resources to training people to provide suicide first aid, to training people to make these warm calls. And also we need the support to actually provide that supervision to people mm-hmm. too. So yeah. The calling partners who are making those calls need to be supported as well. And so we have like supervision of that. And that if we can establish the evidence that we need, which we think we have quantitatively, but we can establish more evidence by kind of really understanding what's happening in the calls. And part of that is looking at the interaction and how our training is affecting the volunteers who are calling them, what is going well, what might could be improved, and mm-hmm. we could improve the service delivery of this. But what we've really found is it was really benefiting the calling partners just as much as the older adults. There was mutually beneficial.
I totally get it. Laura, thank you so much for your time and for sharing your knowledge with us.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Understand Suicide, the podcast of journalist and therapist Paola Fontanelli. If you've been touched by suicide and believe your story might help others, please consider contacting Paola through her website, understandsuicide.com.